What does it mean to have confidence in an institution? It can mean a lot of different things, but in ongoing Gallup polls over time, one trend is clear. Confidence in many American institutions, Congress for sure, the media, churches, the list goes on, is low and has mostly declined over time. With one major exception, the U.S. military. According to a Gallup poll earlier this summer, 60% of respondents said they had a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in the U.S. military. That might sound like a lot. It actually represents a low mark that we hadn't seen since 1997, again, according to Gallup data. So what is it about the U.S. military that gets relatively high marks from the American public? And what does it mean for the military to have that kind of support? Our next guest dug deeper into public opinion to try to answer those questions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How confident are you in the U.S. military? What does confidence in the military mean to you? Has it changed over time? If you or a family member serve or have served, what's your perspective on public support for and confidence in the U.S. military? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Peter Fever is a professor of political science and public policy at Duke University, where he's the director of the Duke Program in American Grand Strategy. His new book is called Thanks for Your Service, The Causes and Consequences of Public Confidence in the U.S. Military. Peter, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with these top line numbers. You dig a lot deeper and we'll get into that. But can you talk about what the trends have been over the last few decades when it comes to big picture support for the U.S. military, confidence in the military?
Well, I thought you summarized it well. Confidence in the military is high, but hollow. It's high relative to confidence in other government institutions, and this has been true for decades, but it is hollow in the sense that part of the props undergirding it are eroding, and we've actually seen a decline, as you note, and some of the props are brittle in that sense that they could crack quickly. And so while it is good news that the confidence in the military remains high despite the decline, there's no basis for complacency.
Depending on when people grew up, they might assume that it's always been a high, this confidence in the U.S. military. As you point out in the book, post-Vietnam War, that wasn't necessarily the case. And in a lot of American history, there was skepticism, even suspicion about the idea of having a standing military at all. Can you give us a little of that historical background?
Well, of course, the Constitution, the framers of the Constitution worried greatly whether they were creating a menace to the Republic by allowing there to be a tiny standing army. The tradition, the American tradition, is really to love the citizen soldier, the one who answered the call, like the Minutemen of the Revolutionary era, or the draft, who answered the draft in World War II, but then go home. We shower that military with benefits, the GI Bill and so forth. But the permanent professional military has tended to be viewed with much more skepticism. And of course, much of that period was before the advent of modern polling. But since the Vietnam War, we've polled pretty consistently about public attitudes to the military. And what you see is that it gradually climbed during the all-volunteer force era, and then it soared in the wake of the Reagan era and the Reagan military buildup, with two very high peaks, one after Desert Storm and one after 9/11.
What made you want to look under the hood in these big overall numbers? And I'm skipping forward to some of the later chapters in your book, Peter. Why does it matter why and how we view the U.S. military with or without confidence?
Well, there's two reasons why. One is a very parochial reason why I wanted to, because in the late 90s, I published an article that said, with a colleague, that said, public confidence in the military is brittle. It's high but brittle and is about to go down. And if you track public confidence from when I published that prediction, which was in September of 2001, confidence spiked immediately after and stayed high for the last 20 years. So I started writing this book because I wanted to find out why I was wrong. And it's ironic that I came to the same ending that I was at, 25 years ago. I think we are high but hollow. And what propped up public support was the rally to the flag after 9/11. But your question asks, what's the policy implications? Mm-hmm. And it does matter. People with higher confidence in the military are more likely to recommend to others to serve in the military. So high public confidence helps prop up and maintain the all-volunteer force. Let me be clear. It's not a tier one factor, and thus the recent decline in public confidence is not a tier one factor driving the current recruitment crisis. But declining confidence makes an already difficult recruitment job that much harder. So we care about it for that. It likewise correlates with things like willing to spend on defense budgets, and also willingness to use the military. So this one number is sort of a good heuristic snapshot of the public's mood regarding the military and their support for other things that might involve the military.
Talking to Peter Fever about his new book, Thanks for Your Service, The Causes and Consequences of Public Confidence in the U.S. Military. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Peter, you worked with survey data to look a lot deeper into this question of what people mean when they say they feel confident in the military. Can you tell us a little bit about how you dug into this and how you tried to deepen what we know from this public opinion information?
Well, we used a variety of survey experiments where you prime respondents with information about the military, whether it's positive or negative, and see that effect on their confidence in the military. And what you find when you use those techniques is that the public does move in response to prompts about whether the military is doing a good job or not. So the competence of the military, the profession, the performance, if you will, of the military, is it doing well on the battlefield or not? That does matter. Likewise, if you prompt respondents with information about military misbehavior, ethical lapses and things like that, that also drives down public confidence. So obviously the professional ethics and the perception that the military holds itself to a high standard and lives up to that high standard, that matters too. Perhaps one of the most interesting findings, though, concerns something that a political scientist calls social desirability bias, where people are giving an answer that they think is the politically correct answer to give. But if you use techniques designed to tap into their true attitudes, you can do so. And when we use those techniques to find out people's true attitudes about public confidence in the military, we find that public confidence drops by as many as 8 to 27 points. It could be a fair bit of hollow confidence where people are just saying they have confidence because that's what they think everybody else is expecting them to say.
A big question is, who are people thinking of when they talk about confidence in the military? Are they supporting the troops, the general idea of the enlisted personnel in the military maybe? Or are they talking about military planners, the Pentagon, the retired generals they see on TV? How did you try to sort out what people meant by the military?
It's all of the above. So no matter what you ask them about, whether they have confidence in the military as an institution, confidence in senior military leaders, by name, prominent military leaders, or interestingly, if you say, think about military people you know, how does that change your attitude about public, your personal confidence in the military? What you find across the board is, yes, it moves in slight directions. People have more confidence in the military in the abstract than in specific senior military leaders. Some people, their confidence in the military goes up when they think about people they know, and some it goes down when told to think about people you know. That's an interesting result there. But on average, across all of them, it's high. So it's not highly sensitive. This metric is not highly sensitive to what the respondent might be thinking about. That does, though, raise another point, which is that, and this is a steady finding across all my polling and many other people's polling, is the public just doesn't know much about the military. And this points to one of the fast eroding pillars of public confidence. people with personal contact in the military have higher confidence and know more about the military than people who don't have personal contact. And of course, demographically, the number of people with personal contact in the military is dropping and will continue to drop dramatically as the older draft era generation passes. We've already mostly seen the passing of the greatest generation, a time when pretty much everybody had a family member who served in the military. And now it's a very tiny percentage, under 20% maybe, of the public that has a personal contact like that in the military. That means what they're learning about the military comes increasingly from media, maybe TV shows, movies, and less reliable sources of information than the kind of personal experience might convey. And that creates the opportunity for lots and lots of myths and confusion and ignorance about the military. And I think that's a growing problem in our country.
We're talking to Peter Fever, professor of political science and public policy at Duke University. His new book is called Thanks for Your Service, The Causes and Consequences of Public Confidence in the U.S. Military. In survey after survey in recent years, the U.S. military gets a lot of confidence from the public, especially compared to other institutions, in particular government institutions. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest about his research? And what do you feel when you think about the U.S. military? Do you have confidence in it? And what does that mean? If you've served or a loved one is serving or has, does that change how you think of the military? Do you feel like people without those connections misunderstand what it means to serve in the military? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation with Duke University political science professor Peter Fever, looking at his new book, Thanks for Your Service, The Causes and Consequences of Public Confidence in the U.S. Military. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you share a commonly held, though not universal, confidence in the U.S. military yourself? Why or why not? If you serve in the military, what do you think, or have served, what do you think people get wrong about it? What do you wish people knew? And what do you think when people say, thanks for your service? Glad to hear it? Annoyed to hear it? I've heard both responses. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Peter, you look at a lot of different factors that might drive people's confidence or lack of same in the military. One you look closely at is party and partisan affiliation. A lot of interesting things came out of that in terms of what people of different political backgrounds think and what they think of the partisan makeup of the military.
Right. So the one of the strong findings is that Republicans traditionally have held much higher esteem in the military than Democrats. So while Americans on average hold the military in high esteem, it's for Democrats, it's a majority view. For Republicans, traditionally, it's been a supermajority view, very, very high. And it almost becomes an identity issue where Republicans say, if you are a Republican, that means you have confidence in the military. If you have confidence in the military, that's a sign likely that you're a Republican. That changed in the last 3 years, interestingly. And I think partly change in response to action by President Trump and other opinion leaders in the Republican Party who started to attack individual members of the military. And then in the last year or two, attack the military as an institution, accusing it of being quote unquote woke. And as a consequence, Republican confidence in the military has moved down markedly. The decline you mentioned at the top is mostly due to a decline among Republicans who now are more skeptical. And so that's opening up an interesting and perhaps problematic period where the military is becoming politicized and becomes a partisan punching bag. And the net result of that could be declining confidence in the military overall. The public, of course, defines politicization as when the military agrees with the other party. So Republicans are not bothered if they see the military agreeing, you know, on a policy issue with a Republican majority, but they are bothered if they see the military agreeing with the policy position that the Democrats hold, and vice versa. And so that means the military is kind of whipsawed. They can't win if they become a partisan football. And we're seeing that increasingly in the last several months. We've made now the military combatants in our culture wars. And that's a very pernicious development that's likely over the long term to hurt public confidence in the military.
Another concern you have is the public's understanding or maybe lack of understanding of the relationship between civilian control of government and the military, and the potential that support for the military might lead people to want to do things that it ought not to do under our system of civil-military relations. Can you talk about that a little?
Right. The one of the things that the public doesn't know a lot about is civil-military relations. I think there's a real decline in civic education in the United States. And so people never really learn about what is best practice for civil-military relations. And that can lead them to a problem of overconfidence in the military, saying, we've got a public policy problem, let's ask the military to handle it. And we've seen that over the last 3-4 years, where the military is rushed out by political leaders as the solution to whatever is the policy problem. We need to deliver COVID vaccines, let's ask the military to do it. Things that are far, far from a military mission. And of course, that may be a consequence of overconfidence, if you will, in the military. And it also is the case that the public is willing to ask the military, have the military do things that would actually be detrimental to civilian control. So siding with the military if they disagree, say, with the president who happens to be from the opposite party, and saying the military would be better off if they disobeyed an order from, say, a president who comes from the opposite party to mine. That, of course, is anathema to civilian control. And perhaps the worst finding was finding the number of people who said they were willing to contemplate military rule, actual military rule. Now, it's a small number, but it's not zero. And so it should be zero. And there's a non-zero fraction of the public that's willing to contemplate that kind of thing. And that's clearly problematic for civil-military relations.
Let's bring on a caller. Steve is with us in Stevens Point. Steve, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Steve?
Well, I'm a former Navy pilot, and I can tell you that confidence in the military certainly took a hit when there was an incident at Tail Hook. And I also think that our country has had a little bit of a hit on confidence in the military after our withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Steve, both great points. Thanks for calling in. First of all, Peter, he gets into something you look at in the book. Our perception of professional ethics in the military took a hit, Steve says, with Tail Hook, the rape and sexual harassment scandal.
Right. He pointed out two of the main pillars undergirding public confidence. One is professional ethics, that the military is performing responsibly, and Tail Hook suggested that they were not, indicated that they were not. And you would expect, and rightly so, public confidence should drop when news of such gross misbehavior emerges. The other is more complicated, but it refers to the performance of the military in Afghanistan. There was a slight dip, but not a large dip in public confidence in the military after Afghanistan, not as large as you might expect. And the reason is because the public so far does not blame that on the military. Mm-hmm. They blame that on the civilian political leaders, but from the other party. So Republicans blame Democratic political leaders, and Democrats blame Republican political leaders. But both Republicans and Democrats say the military did okay, and so did my politicians. They pin the blame elsewhere. And so far, there hasn't been as much of a reckoning on the Afghanistan case as you might expect. But overall, when the military performs well, it does increase public confidence. So before Tail Hook was Desert Storm, and the Desert Storm performance caused a real spike.
Steve, thanks for the call. Peter, I want to take just a couple minutes on a conclusion you reached that I got to say I didn't quite see coming. You're all for people having confidence in the military if the military earns that confidence. You see a problem in having so much confidence in the military, but not other civilian institutions, government institutions. And part of your solution to that is to raise the profile and raise the respect for those other kinds of service. Can you talk about that a little?
Right. The problem is not high confidence in the military. It's high confidence in the military coupled with low confidence in all other civilian institutions. Or it would be high confidence in the military that's totally undeserved. So I want the military to earn high confidence, but then it will function best if the public sees the rest of government working as well. And also if it sees that there are many ways of contributing to the public good. You mentioned the awkwardness of getting thanked for your service in the airport. Many, many military members have told me that makes them feel awkward. And I encourage them to, rather than feel awkward, engage the person in conversation and say, well, what do you do? And if they say, well, I'm just a middle school teacher, thank them for their public service. That's an important contribution. There's a lot of ways to contribute to the public good, and not just by serving in the military or serving as a first responder. Those are important, and they deserve the recognition we in society give them, but there's many, many other ways to serve, even to include serving in elected office and serving as a quote-unquote bureaucrat in government. That is public service as well. And I think if we can raise our general public confidence in the performance of these other political institutions, that will help civil-military relations as well. Of course, those other institutions have to earn it as well, and that's the challenge.
Peter, thanks as always for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Peter Fever, professor of political science and public policy at Duke University. He's director there in the program in American Grand Strategy. His new book is called Thanks for Your Service, The Causes and Consequences of Public Confidence in the U.S. Military.